Here's the title for today. Learning to lean more. Learning to lean more. Can you imagine living in a country that you'd be treated worse than a dog, persecuted, beaten, tortured, killed, and even your family might be killed in front of you just because of your religion or because you went to church on Saturday? It's happened in the past, in the Holocaust. It's happening now in some place around the world, just being a Christian, being beheaded and killed. Someday that could and will happen here. You don't have to turn, but in Exodus 31:13, it talks about the Sabbath being a sign, one of the signs of God's people keeping Saturday, the seventh day. So it's easy to pick out who's going to church on Saturday is one of those easy little signs. But turn back to Revelations 2 verse 10, please. Revelations 2 verse 10. Revelations 2 verse 10. Don't be afraid of what you are about to suffer. The devil will throw some of you into prison to test you. You will suffer for 10 days, but you will remain faithful. And even when facing death, I will give you the crown of life. In the end, there's going to be some tough times. And just write down 2 Timothy 3:12. 2 Timothy 3:12. You don't have to go there, but all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. Living a Christian life, living God's calling, it's not easy all the time. Very rewarding, but not easy. When you read these verses and you're thinking about the end times and you think about just right now, we're going to need a friend to lean on to help us through these. And are we working on that relationship like crazy now? I read a book called The Happiest Man in the World, a Holocaust survivor. It's kind of unique that it'd be called that. Has anybody read that book? It's really popular. No one raised their hand. I did. Okay, but Happiest Man in the World, it's from Eddie Jacques' life. And it's about him and his friend, Kurt, super close friend, how they leaned on each other and made it through the persecution, made it through the death camps. And but just to tell you a little bit about Eddie, he considered him a German first and a Jew second. He was proud of his country. But all that changed November 9th, 1938. Eddie returned home from college to an empty home, oblivious of the persecution that the Jews had been going through at the time. Eddie had not seen his family in 5 years because he had been kicked out of college for being Jewish. So his dad's like, no, education is so important. You've got to do it. So his dad got him fake papers of a non-Jewish boy. And so he went hours away where no one would know him and went to college there. So he could not have contact with his parents during this time. But finally, he graduated from college engineering, and it was one of the best engineering schools in all of Europe, at top of his class. So he's going to come home to surprise his family. Well, he came home, and no one was home. He was like, what is up? So he had a key, so he opened up the door, and he went in, and his little wiener dog, which the Hermans can relate to, their little wiener dog, came and just, oh, he's like, oh, this is great. Family's not here, but this is incredible. I got my dog, and he's like, well, they'll come back. So he went up to his room, it was kind of like what he'd left it, and fell asleep. Well, he was woken up in the middle of the night. Nazis had him by his arms. They were hitting him, holding him down, taking their bayonet and carving a swastika in his arm. Well, the dog loved him. So the dog went to protect him. And they hit him with a bayonet and killed the little dog. And he's like, you dumb Jew dog. That's what they called the little wiener dog. And he was beaten. They didn't try to kill him at that time, but he was arrested and he was taken to a concentration or death camp. You know, he'd just been going to college and everything was nice because he was under a false identity and there wasn't the internet and everything, and he was all into his studies. He didn't really realize because he wasn't being persecuted. But then things can change real quick back then, and they can change real quick now too. That night was called the Night of Broken Glass. And it's when the Nazis attacked synagogues, Jewish homes, and they broke so many of the big windows in the stores, there's glass everywhere. But neighbors turned against their Jewish neighbors, and children were thrown into the water, drowned, people were killed and beat. And it was just a terrible night, but it changed like that. I mean, it had been going up that way, and then all of a sudden it just changed. Over the next 7 years, Eddie faced unimaginable horrors in these death camps. Every day he had just terrible things. You've seen the pictures of the starving people, but I just can't imagine the smells and all that they went through. It's a very graphic, but it brings it out in the book. But he was in a concentration called Buchenwald and in Auschwitz, and then he was also on a death march where at the end, when the Allied forces were winning, and just to try to get, they were trying to destroy Auschwitz so there'd be no evidence of all that they'd killed. So they were walking the prisoners around, and a lot of them were dying. But it goes through the memories of Eddie and his friend Kurt as they go to different, they end up in different concentration camps. They're like, hey, see you again. It's God had to be working that out somehow. And how they survived, they were such close friends. And Eddie was like, this is such a precious gift that he lived through all of this, that he promised that he would smile every day for all those that weren't alive and didn't still have friends, and then for the 6 million of Jews that were murdered by Hitler. Today, at 101 years old of age, he wrote the book, Happiest Man on Earth. He said he was dedicated to living the best possible life. And one of his quotes was, I want to make the world a better place for everyone. Jaku said, which is his last name, Eddie's last name, I want everyone to just take a step back and say, we are here for all of us. You know, how can I help you? No matter religion, whatever, what can I do? No matter who I meet. Family and friends, he said, helped him get through this, but especially his friend Kurt. He said, friendship is priceless. He said, shared sorrow is half sorrow. You know, you're going through something and you're going through it with a friend, it's half sorrow. But he said, shared pleasure is double. When you get something and you share it with your best friend, it's twice as good. And he realized without Kurt, there's to lean on, to really trust, he would have never made it out of those death camps. Just a couple of things, how he leaned on Kurt. And Kurt leaned on him, literally. One time they put around 100 Jewish people into a dark basement. And it wasn't a big basement. And they turned out all the lights. Well, Eddie had been through one of these things before. And what they do, they'll spray hoses down there. They'll throw explosives in there. So people panic and they stomp each other to death. So what Kurt and Eddie did, they went to a corner in the wall, and they found another guy, and they're like, you two watch, and I'll be behind you, and I can sleep, because they would keep them down there for days. And then you'd hear gunfire, and then you hear fire, say, yeah, fire, fire, and people would just stomp each other to death. But by leaning on each other and leaning into the corner, one could sleep, and two would watch out for the other two. And just how graphic it was when they finally turned on the lights and everybody was able to get out, and it was terrible. But how they were there for each other physically, mentally, because there was many times that they thought about committing suicide. Because this is 7 years long time being in here. And they'd seen other people who had ran to the electric fences and just committed suicide that way. But they yearned to see each other. They weren't in the same barracks, but they yearned to see each other every day, and they try to find ways that they could see each other. And I just thought about that, the way us here at church are. You know, do we really treasure, and I think with COVID, it's helped us to treasure more the times we get to spend with each other here, or the times we call each other on the phone and be there. But one of the physical things that Kurt and Eddie did was, Kurt had a kind of a cush job of helping make shoes. Well, Eddie had to work in the coal mines, worked in factories, and Kurt would get some extra food every once in a while since he was in a cush job. So he would sneak raw potatoes to Eddie so he could, and whatever he could find, and give him a little bit extra, because sometimes the factories where he worked were supposed to feed him and they didn't always. And he would have starved to death. Eddie found an old bowl, a metal bowl, and he fixed it. There was a hole in it. And with his engineering skills and working at the factory, now they could boil some of these potatoes. And they'd actually charge others. It's like, hey, we'll boil your potato if you give us a half of one. And so they worked together like that. But they also used their humor, too. One day he was given potatoes, Eddie was, and you didn't want any of the guards to find out. You could be killed for, they think you were stealing the potatoes or something like that. Well, one of the guards, just for fun, kicks Eddie in the stomach. Well, that's where he had his potatoes. And he fell down and pretended to be hurt worse than he was, and then went away. And then he's like, looked inside, and they're all mashed. And he told his friend, I guess we're going to have mashed potatoes tonight. You know, but they worked together mentally, and they survived. And on the end, like I was telling you about that death march, his friend Kurt wasn't going to make it. They were having to walk bare, almost naked, and for miles and miles, and 15,000 died, but it was negative 20 degrees, and it was a miracle that he survived. Kurt did, but Eddie found a way to put some stuff over Kurt and protect him, but someone had to protect the hole that he put him in when the guards were distracted. And so Eddie had to keep walking in the death march, but he helped his friend make it and get away, because he was even weaker and would have never made the negative 20 degrees and the walking. So helped him, and they later met each other, and it was just like, wow, it's a miracle to be back together. But you just look at that friendship, and physically, none of us probably really can imagine what they went through, but how close they would be after that and how much they had to have each other, else they wouldn't have survived. It just reminded me that for my purpose today is the importance of learning to lean, the importance of learning to lean and trust more on our best friend. Our best friend, God, every day. And to trust God, our best friend, every day. In all things, not just a little, but turn to Deuteronomy. It's one of the encouraging, powerful scriptures. There's so many encouraging, powerful scriptures that are in the Bible to really, Deuteronomy 31, verse 6. They just come alive to you when you look at it, and like, you can be going through a tough day, and God, I'm going to lean on your scriptures and help me to get through this day. In verse 6, it says, so be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid and do not panic before them. For the Lord your God will personally go ahead of you. He will never fail you nor abandon you. Never. He will never leave us. He will never forsake us. Lean on God. He's the ultimate best friend. Many of the Psalms remind us to lean on God, you know, through our pain, for our difficult challenges throughout life. Turn to Psalm 71, if you would, and put your marker there, if you have a marker in your Bible, because we will be coming back to it every once in a while. Psalms 71 is an example. It is written from the perspective of an older person, and now that I'm a half a century old, I can relate even more. And no old jokes out there, Tiffany, okay? But in verse 9, and we'll read the whole thing, but in verse 9, do not cast me off in the time of my old age. Do not forsake me when my strength is spent. In 71, it describes a person who has leaned on God and has been supported by God and his work throughout his entire life, remembering, looking back on all the different things where God has supported him and his family. And it's just, this psalm's really encouraging to look back and try to be like this author and remember this. So let's read Psalm 71 and verse 1. In you, O Lord, I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame in the righteousness. Deliver me and rescue me. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be to me a rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me, for you are my rock, my fortress. Rescue me, O God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and cruel. For you, O Lord, are my hope, my trust, O Lord, from my youth. Upon you I have leaned. From my birth, it was you who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually. You can just imagine going through this verse when you're going through something and just thinking, God, protect me. But look back and say, he's always been there. It's a great verse to pray. The first part of it, what does it mean by, for you, O Lord, are my hope, my trust, O Lord, from my youth upon you I have leaned from my birth. When you look at that, it's first person. He's talking about not the Lord, but he's like, you, O Lord. Like you're talking to your friend. Hey, Kurt, my friend, you were there for me in the concentration. You, O Lord, you are my hope. You know how he hoped to see him the next day, hopes to see God and help him through him. It's like a lifelong companion. He's talking to him. And when we're talking in our prayers, we can get personal. It doesn't have to be a recited, just talking to him like your best friend. When you look at the word trust, I look in Strong's definition, and there's lots of different definitions. To hope, to sure, to trust, a refuge, security. When you trust in God, that's what you can think of. When you look at Webster's dictionary, it talks about, the first one that came up was to trust in firm belief in the honesty and the reliability of somebody. To trust in that honesty and that reliability that someone's going to be there for you. When you stop and think about the people in your life, the people you surround yourself with, who do you trust the most? When you really think about it, who do I? I mean, I trust my wife the most. We've been together more than half our life, 25 years. Through trials, through sicknesses, through children's sicknesses, through miscarriages, through stinky socks. I mean, if that doesn't put it to the edge right there, my stinky, she still is with us, with me. And you can't take that for granted. But you just look at that, how much you love and adore that person in your life or that friend in your life and how they've always been there. And did it happen that you trusted them the first day you met them? No, it was over years. It's developed. And that's what this psalm is. It's looking back over his entire life. He's looked how God has been there and keep trusting. And God, don't leave me. You've helped me this whole time. Don't leave me. But just think about how you feel about that friend in your life or your mate or whoever that you trust the most with. And how God is even more than that. What's the difference between faith and trust? Dennis Luker, who used to be the president of the United Church of God, he had done a sermon, and he's like, this isn't the official difference, but it's, if you knew Dennis Luker, he was so personable and so caring. He didn't preach at you. He's like, I'm here with you. He's kind of that kind of best friend. And he just put it in personal way. But he's like, one of the definitions of faith is in Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 and verse 6. Hebrews 11 and verse 6. It's one of the definitions of it. And without faith, it is impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists. And that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So one part of faith is that you truly believe that there is a God. And that part, I think most of us, if not all of us, really believe that there is a God. And that part of faith, I understand, but trust. What is trust? And when you think about it, how much do I really trust God with my life, with everything in my life? Every action, every thought, what I do, trusting him that he'll be there. I always think back to the old time when I jumped off the hot air balloon in a bungee cord. You know, it's one thing to say, I trust God. It's another thing, I trust this cord that I'm not gonna break and snap. and everything. But I don't know. You just visually go back to some of your memories. It's like, I totally trusted that rope when I jumped off of it. And that bungee cord, it did save me, but it still hurt. But you just, it comes back visually when you think of stuff like that. It comes like, okay, would I do that for God? What action do I put in it? Do I trust him that much? We need to ask ourselves almost every day, Father, help me to trust you today, to take charge, to take control. Because if I take control, I'm going to mess up something. And trusting him in the morning and praying to work out everything. From the little things. You know, everything we ask him, God could do pretty much like that. There's nothing that's too hard for him to do. So everything we come to him is kind of little. It's important, but it's little. But it's like, so there's nothing too little to pray to God about. Whether it's work, whether it's anything. What should I wear today? You know, it's not, and sometimes for girls, that's a big issue. And how long, what am I going to wear? But no, just so I'm modest. You think it's too much. It's like, I want to be modest, but I want to be pretty, you know? But every single thing, going to God. When you're in a traffic light or behind a train, it's like, do you get frustrated? Or you're like, God, let me take this time to pray to you and just thank you that I wasn't in a wreck. I didn't hit that train, you know? And asking God for that purpose to guide you to that right person. How can I serve in church? How, whatever, to guide every action I do. When I go into a sales presentation or other thing, it's like, hey, God, guide me to see that right person. The other day I was at Kroger's, and there was a little lady, and she had a grocery cart, and I was like, hey, you want me to help you with that? Oh, do you need one? I was like, no, I'll just take it up for you. And she just started crying. And she's like, I just had surgery, and you're helping me out. I know, I'm going to cry now. Great, great, great. I'm a big mush. But it was just like, and then you thank God, right, that guide me every action. It's not too little. And then she's like, oh, bless you. And she was just the sweetest old lady. And you're just like, man, I feel great, you know? But did that just happen? No. You're praying God to guide you in every little action. And it makes a difference when we lean on God for everything. To lean, let's look at the definition of lean. Lean, Strong's definition, to rest on God, to support, that God's going to support you through those trials. I just love that, to rest upon. God's going to help you through, just like Kurt and Eddie did in that dark basement to survive. Spiritually, we have to lean on God like that in every day, or we're not going to survive. Psalm 71, did you stay there? You got your marker back there. And verse 17, it says, oh God. You guys probably don't have your marker. Verse 17, sorry. Oh God, from my youth you have taught me, and I still proclaim your wondrous works. He knows God. God has been there. He just doesn't know about God. He sees and he's looking for those actions that God has helped him through. Even when there was wicked, even when there was cruel, even when there's threatening things, he realizes God was there through everything. In Psalm 71, it encourages us to have hope. No matter how bad it is, it's going to turn out good. Something good is going to happen. In the end, Christ returns. Whether we're healed then, or if God chooses to heal us now, or deliver us now, whether his grace is sufficient now, but to be focused that in the end, it's going to be fixed. Whatever problem, whatever health, whatever thing we're going through. And it gives us that hope that God's going to be there. Just reminding us, looking back through our life, one of the points, there's like three little points that I wrote down from that, you know, walking the Christian life, if strong in faith, devoted to God, it doesn't guarantee there's not going to be complications. In the verses we read before, there are going to be issues. But don't let that make you not lean on God during those times. Lean on him even more, because you look back like the Psalms did here and where God did help him in the past. Since his birth, it reminds us that God's nature in this is he wants to be a refuge over and over. That's his nature. He wants to protect like a bird, you know, protecting its nest. His nature, he doesn't want us to go through pain, but sometimes he knows it's necessary to perfect our character. And there's reasons for us, but having that faith to lean on him no matter what. Have you guys ever done those trust falls where you lean back and usually somebody catches you? And they're supposed to, it's that total trust in somebody. And I've seen cases where people have been, luckily there was mats down, distracted, and someone fell partially and hit. And in our lives, we're going to trust human friends. And sometimes we're not going to get caught all the time. Sometimes they are not going to be there for us, but God isn't. He is always going to help catch us in the end. And when you think about leaning on each other here, leaning on God, this last year, there's been a lot of things that have tried to cause division. Satan realizes how important it is to have these close friendships here. And we're kind of talking about it earlier, about cutting each other slack. Don't judge other people about what they're doing. Just pray for them, help them, be there for them. You know, and there's so many ways to cause division, but Satan is trying to cut us from leaning on each other, cut us from being here together with this COVID and everything. It's just, he understands how important it is for us to be here, leaning on God to inspire us, to make a difference when we go back into the world. In Hebrews 10:25, if you turn back there, Hebrews 10, verse 25. This is a commanded assembly to be here. Verse 25, not neglecting to meet together as it is a habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing close. As the day draws close, as Christ returns, it's going to be harder and harder to meet. You think about the Jewish people, how they had to meet in the Holocaust. They had to hide whether they were going to meet, you know, for the Sabbath, or they were killed if they did meet. And it's going to get tougher. It's a commanded assembly. It's not that hard to meet as it is going to be someday. And be thinking about that. Think how Eddie, like I talked about earlier, and Kurt, they yearned with all their hope and desire to see each other each day, to get through one more day, and how we should be that way with the church. And asking God to inspire us and to lean on him. God promises to watch out for us. Are we really watching out for one another? Are we making that extra effort to be there for people, to help them, to lean on us, to call, to go over, to visit, to send letters? And some of you guys make the best letters with the verses, and you just don't want to throw away the letter. And those are so encouraging. And they're ways to help strengthen that bond, to keep leaning on each other as friends here. And then behind that, you know, that's God inspiring us to do that. Because I knew one lady, she always prayed before she picked what card to send. And I was like, wow, that's one of the few cards I've ever kept. And then to hear that's why you do it. It's like God inspires you and you lean on him. So you're leaning on God to guide the right card you pick for somebody. It seems small, but it isn't. Everything. You know, that realization, that dependence on God. And verse 6 back on 71, verse 6 back, Psalm 71, if you kept your marker there. In verse 6, it says that God took me from his mother's womb. So complete dependence on God ever since he was born. Realizing that ever since I was born, you were there for me. And in today's society, there's continually reducing the need for a God. You know, God, you don't need God. But this author is saying ever since birth, there's no way to overemphasize how important it is to be dependent on God and to lean on him. Don't trust money with the way inflation is. And sometimes you think you don't trust money, but then when you decide to work a little bit on the Sabbath, oh, I really need that overtime. Or there's all these justifications. You're just like, I don't trust in the money. I trust in God. No, you're trusting in the money. In 1 Timothy 6, verse 17. Or if we're working so much that we don't have time for our spiritual growth, our spiritual development, it's all about that money. No, God can make $1 go to pay for a million things. He can. We just can't. And he promises to be there for our needs. In 1 Timothy 6, verse 17, command those who are rich in the present age to not be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things. All things are given from God. Let them do good, that they be rich in good works and ready to give, willing to share. If you do have that money, willing to share, like Eddie said, you know, when you split those sorrows, it's half the sorrows. When you share what God has blessed you with, it's double a blessing. When you see their faces lighten up and you're helping somebody, storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come, and that they may lay a hold on eternal life. You know, we're all rich compared to the rest of this world. It's just looking for ways we can share what we do have. And they're like, hey, how am I going to make it? But God stretches that money. So many times when we're leaning on God, he sends that right support person to help you through it. Like Eddie and Kurt, they kept meeting each other in different concentration camps and other things. And I think God sent him to help him through that. So maybe he could write this book. Who knows? But he sure appreciated it. And I was praying about this sermon, and I was like, okay, and it's coming up. Can you help me a little bit more? I'm stuck again. And I was in the Arby's line, and I know that's a great place to pray, but hey, I was praying there. I was hungry too. And next thing I get a call, and there was somebody who needed me, asked me to stop by. So I stopped by their house, and I was singing, Lean On Me When You're Not Strong. And I was taking out some of her trash and stuff for her and stuff. She's like, what are you singing? And I was just telling her, I was this song, Lean On Me. I was doing a sermon and on it. And then she started about cry. And she was like, she had been praying to God. And for like 6 or 7 weeks, she'd been totally shut in. Couldn't do one step outside the house. She was just in pain, walking, so much inflammation in her body, and she said she's about to give up. You know how health problems can just drag on for years and just wear you out. But she, in tears, prayed to God and said, I just want to walk a little. You know, use me how you want to. Why are you keeping me alive? But use me how you'd want to, but I'm just giving it all to you. There's no way how I can keep going on like this. How am I going to do it? And she said in her prayer, they talked to her and said, he's like inspired her to think one step at a time. One step at a time. And then she started thinking about herself in the kingdom when she is totally healed. In a twinkling of an eye, she'd be totally healed. And she got thinking so much more positive. God's going to heal her someday. And it helped her. And this week she's been outside twice, and she even drove the other day. She felt so much better. And then the other day she couldn't get out. But I mean, it's baby steps and stuff like that. But just to totally surrender in tears to God, just help me. And for us to visualize more in the kingdom how when God is really going to solve everything, I thought it's helped her to stay positive. One way to strengthen and lean on God even more and trust on him more is, I've talked about this before, write down little miracles that happen in your life. Think about it. Make it a ritual for on Sabbath. You talk about and think about, how did God help me this week? And it's not going to be parting the Red Sea every week, but it's going to be little things. God worked this out. God worked this out. I think God helped this happen to this. But writing it down, I put it in my iPad, just little things, and I think work can probably see it, but so if my work ever sees it, it's canceled. Miracle list. Okay, great. Oh, that's good. They can read it. I don't care. But in Deuteronomy 33, verse 27, Deuteronomy 33, Verse 27. The eternal God is my refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. You just visualize God's arms underneath you, helping you through everything you do each day. Sometimes he's got to really hold on, and then other times it's a little bit, but it's just such an encouraging verse, his everlasting arms. You know, I'm visual. Draw a little picture of arms right next to that. God, and when you're going through tough times, think about that. Because it helps us to memorize some of these. I am terrible at memorizing, so I do lists. I put them on my iPad, and I have it speak to me. If you can copy, speak, and I'm driving around, and some of those, and you can pick whatever accent you want God to have that day. And you know how I am with accents. I like accents. So, but just to keep that in your mind, to encourage you. Because Satan is always trying to say, God isn't there. You can't lean on him. He won't catch you this time. Look, you fell. Yeah, you come down a little, and sometimes we're bruised and stuff, but he's going to be there for us. I love scriptures. God's promises, they don't change. They strengthen us. But memorizing them, having a list, whatever you do, and to really help you. Another way to help us to grow and, you know, leaning and trusting God is to find a song. Go ahead and start making a special playlist. Tess had a playlist last night, and I was like, oh, that was a good playlist you're playing. And I'm like, on the Sabbath, have that special playlist. Have that playlist to start your morning. Satan knows how much music can affect your mind, and so does God. He has choir singing to him all the time in heaven. But one of the songs was Lean on Me, which I am not going to sing for you. My wife said no. And but Bill Withers wrote that song, and back in 1972, so it's almost as old as me. It was number one on the charts. But when you hear the words, and I was talking to Rowena last week, when you listen to those words, because I was singing the song last week even before I wrote this sermon, exactly. I was going to do it on Obadiah, and then somehow it switched over. But thinking of the song's words as Jesus was singing to you. Or sometimes when I'm listening to it, I think of another friend that was there for me and sent that special email that helped you and just knew exactly what to say. Or you being there for someone else to inspire you. Let me be a friend. So let's go through the words real quick. And sometimes in our lives, we all have pain. We all have sorrow. Like we read those verses, we're all going to go through trial and persecutions. But if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. When I thought of that, I'm like, there's always the world tomorrow. Like really visualizing that and how great it's going to be and yearning for it even more. Lean on me when you're not strong. You know, that humble mind. That's the way God's going to use us when we're not strong. But I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on. For it won't be long till I'm going to need somebody to lean on. It won't be long. We need him every day. We need to be there for other people every day. Please swallow your pride. You know, swallow your pride. You can't do it. We need God. We need others to help us. If I have things you need to borrow, for no one can fill those of your needs that you won't let show, you just call me, brother, when you need a hand. Boy, that sounded really no rhythm there, did it? You really need to listen to the song later. It's a lot better. Or listen to Tessa Farrah sing it. She was singing it the other day, and it was going. But it was good. But they are so good. I listened to on YouTube the lyrics. And it says, when you need a hand, God wants. That's in his nature to help us. He wants to. If there's a load you have to bear, we talked about that. He's there with his arms to help bear us that stress. And at the end it says, call me. And I just think it's talking about, he doesn't think it, but I think about it. It's like, pray continually for everything. Lean on him. Pray about everything. Just keep calling me. I'm there. I'm listening. These scriptures, the list that you make, the songs, they're concrete little things that can strengthen our faith. You know, Jesus invites us in Matthew 11. If Matthew 11, he wants us to trust him. He wants us to come to him. Matthew 11, verse 28. Come to me, all of you who are weary and are carrying heavy burdens. We just talked about that in that song. And I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. You learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. And you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You just can't just read it. You just got to say, he says, come to me. It's like a father saying to your child that is hurting, a broken heart in a relationship. No, come to me. Stressed out about grief. Come to me. Think of how you feel with that child, and God is inviting you to come lean on him. It's a part of our Christian development to keep working on that. Turn back to Psalm 71. Psalm 71, verse 6. If you kept that spot, it said, my praise is continually of you. Through the good and the bad, we've got to praise God. I mean, thinking of all the things he has done. Like Eddie, he went through the Holocaust. His family members getting killed. And what does he want to do? He wants to bring a smile to the world. He's not bitter. He wants to help everybody. In our actions, in our thoughts, submitting them to God. And this is one of the best verses for really working on trust is Proverbs 3. Turn back to Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all thy heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. It's a great scripture to think about, to start your day off. God, I need your help in all these areas. I need to trust you in all these areas. You know, in my heart, where my emotions, where my anxiety is, where a lot of times my pain is, you know. Lean not on your own understanding. I don't know which way to decide, but help me make a decision. And always acknowledge him. That means in prayer and everything you do, acknowledge him and ask him, say, you've guided me in the past, help me now. Direct my paths. Direct wherever I go today. Whoever I see, help me to say hi to that person who needs it. Daily, ask God to help us. Look into our lives and look, where am I stressed out the most? What are you stressed out most about right now? Is it finances? Is it a relationship? Is it your health? And be honest. It's fine to be concerned about it, and because they're big deals for us, a lot of these things. But with God's Holy Spirit, he can help us to lean on him. Like we were talking back in Matthew 11, verse 28, it said to rest, to lay your heavy problems on him and leave them there. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, sometimes I'm like, I don't leave them there. When I get done praying, I'm still anxious. I'm like, why don't I have a peace when I get off on my knees? And sometimes I don't. And I heard a great analogy that kind of helped me. Just this week, I did it a couple times. And it's like, think of a father and a child, and it's school season. And it's like, Dad, my shoes are all wore out. Can you get me some new shoes? Can we go shopping? And the dad's like, yeah, sure. Hour later, hey, are we going to go shopping, Dad? Hey, you know, yeah, we will. And a day goes by. Dad, are you really going to take me? Are you going to take me? I need shoes really bad. Yes, I will take you. And then comes back again. You're not going to take me. I'm going to look homeless. I'm going to go to school, look homeless because I don't have shoes. And sometimes that's the way we do with our prayers. We're coming back to God in an anxious way. Well, think about it this way. If you ask for those shoes and you're like, thanks, Dad. Hour later, Dad, I can't wait. This is going to be awesome going shopping with you, Dad. You are the best dad. And then the next day, Dad, I've been looking forward to this all day. I just can't wait. What kind of shoe we're going to get? This is going to be great. You said we're going to. This is awesome. And even the next day, Dad, I love spending time with you. This is going to be fun. Is he going to do it right then? Is he going to do it later? And some of our answers are going to be right then. But it's just that mindset of when we come back to God, having that confidence, that boldness, and being in a positive attitude. It's like, I've given this to you. It's up to you now. I mean, you're going to guide me if I need to do something, but I just thought it was a neat way to say, I'm leaning totally on you, but I'm going to lean in a positive way. And that was one of the ways I was praying at Arby's. I'm like, I'm going to put this on you, God. I'm not going to be anxious about this sermon anymore. It's going to be you. And then all of a sudden, I meet with this lady, and she's telling about how she was totally leaning on God. And it's awesome. Some of them answered quick, and then others aren't. Another thing is to strengthen your and really lean on God is to say it. Say it out loud. Tell other people, you know, got these health issues or whatever you're talking about. I've given it to God. God's going to work this out. I'm needing that job, and it's getting closer and closer, and bills are piling up. God's going to provide. He is. And telling others that you have confidence in God. When you say that, turn to Matthew 17, verse 20. Matthew 17, verse 20. And I love this scripture. And it amazed me since a child. And it still does me. In Matthew 17, verse 20, he replied, because you have so little faith, truly I tell you, if you have faith as of a mustard seed, you can say to the mountains, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing is impossible for you. If you have the faith, if you lean on God and trust him as of a mustard seed, and you say it, don't just think it, you say it out loud, and if it's God's will, it will happen. Finally, just an example of trusting and leaning on God, the example of Esther. Turn back to Esther 3:8. We love watching this movie, Esther, and with having four girls, you know, Esther's a strong role model. But she didn't just have faith. She just didn't have trust. She leaned on God totally with her life. And it started in verse 8. We know the story about Haman. And he said to King Ahasuerus, that's hard to say, but there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in the province of your kingdom. And their laws are different from all other peoples. So he's talking about God's people, the Jews, and God's laws. And they do not keep the king's laws. Therefore, it's not fitting for the king to let them remain. I just think of a snake, you know, whispering, hey, king, let's get rid of these people. You know, just in a sick way. So we know the story, how evil Haman is trying to influence the king to make a decree. And in verse 2, if it pleases the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed. These people will not obey the king and will not keep the king's laws. You know, he's just whispering, they're not listening to you. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasury. So he's appealing to the king's, you'll get money if we get this done. And I'll probably steal it from the Jews that I kill so I can pay you to kill them. It's sick. So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman. And we all know with the Medes and Persians, when you give your signet ring, that's law, it has to be done. And that's it. The son of Hamadiah, the Agite, the enemy of the Jews, verse 11, and the king said to Haman, the money and the people are given to you to do with what seems good to you. And there's a correlation between Hitler and Haman because both of them were trying to kill all the Jews. And you do some research, there's even research thinking that he might be related to Haman. And it's not doctrine, but there is research when they did DNA tests and stuff like that, and when they try to find the genealogy, and it's weird how Satan might work it that way. Imagine that happening like we talked about in the United States. a decree put out, anybody who keeps the Sabbath will be killed. And we know in chapter 4, Esther and Mordecai's uncle, they find out about this, and Esther's put to the test of her faith, whether she's going to lean on her faith. And Mordecai tells her she's got to go in front of the king and for the Jews to save their lives. And she's like, I haven't gone in front of them in 30 days. So it's me with a little faith going, if I go in front of the king, law was that anybody who comes in front of the king without being called can be killed unless the king says it's okay. But Mordecai sent back the letter saying, let's turn there, 4 verse 1, and I'll go down a little bit. 4 verse, let's turn to verse 12. So they said to Mordecai, Esther's words, and Mordecai told him and answered Esther, do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace, because she was Jewish too, any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet, who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? You're called, you're put in this place to help save the people. Then Esther told him to reply to Mordecai, go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. She knew she needed their help. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days. One day during atonement is hard enough for me, but 3 days. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against law. And if I perish, I perish. Fasting humbles. We all need to be doing probably more fasting. So we can lean on her like Esther leaned on God. But it took that prayer, that fasting, for her to get the nerve to completely put her life on the line to go in front of the king. Just a wonderful example. For the final verse, turn to Isaiah 26, if you would. Isaiah 26 and verse 3. Isaiah 26 and verse 3. And you will keep him in perfect peace. In perfect peace. Whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever. For in the Lord is everlasting strength. Like Kurt and Eddie, they leaned on each other with everything. They knew they couldn't make it without her. We need to humble ourselves each and every day and think about how important that relationship is, to keep learning and working on leaning on God on every aspect, every thought. And as we lean more on God and trust Him, God will grant us that peace. More of that peace will come when we get off our knees and we leave that problem with God. Please, on your own time, listen to that song today and listen to it with the lyrics. It just comes alive, and just so when you hear that song some other time, you're like, hey, how can I help somebody lean on me? And thank God for helping us lean on Him.